This is George Fisher, your CBS Radio Motion Picture Editor, with the last-minute news and views of Hollywood Today. I'll have the confidential Movieland reports partially transcribed with the full story in just a moment.
CBS Radio brings you every kind of show. Pleasure for everyone. Wonderful hours of fun. Turn your dial for a smile. Entertainment all the while. You'll hear the best wherever you go. Just tune to CBS Radio.
Make tonight your night for romance. Another absorbing dramatization on most of the CBS stations this evening.
Wherever you go, tune in to CBS Radio.
There's a sparkling musical highlight coming your way this evening as Ella Fitzgerald and Joe Venuti join Bing Crosby on most of these same CBS stations. And now, here is George Fisher.
And here's Hollywood Today. Millionaire Howard Hughes took over duties as chairman of RKO Studios' board of directors today, 3 months after he sold his controlling interest in the studio. The airplane manufacturer was chosen to head the board last night as a successor to attorney Arnold Grant, who resigned recently. Hughes was requested to rejoin the company by Chicago businessman Ralph Stalkin, head of the syndicate that bought Hughes' controlling 1 million shares in the studio. He was elected to the board of directors December 12th. The five-man board was completed last night with the election of A.D. Simpson, vice chairman of the National Bank of Commerce of Houston, Texas. Other directors include Noah Dietrich, also a director of Hughes' tool company, Trans World Airways, and the National Bank of Commerce, J. Miller Walker, an RKO executive for 22 years, and Ed Burke, Jr., who represents the Stolken Syndicate. When this is all finally arranged, perhaps RKO Studios will make some sense. This is in no way Hughes' fault, but the fault of the group who took it over from Hughes. Well, John Huston, the director, is expected in Hollywood today with a print of the new picture he made in Europe, Moulin Rouge, starring José Ferrer. This movie will open on the 23rd in Hollywood, and your reporter has been signed to MC the gala Christmas premiere. You know, something bothers me right now, and that is the dozen or so movies that are being released in and around Christmas time. It's always annoying to go through a film season of pretty bad movies and then have all the so-called good movies descend upon you for 1 week only, as a rule, so that they can qualify for Academy Award consideration. True, some of them are movies that have just been completed, but for the most part, a good many of them have been finished for months, and they are held back from the public just for the Academy Award race. You see, it is a rule of the Academy that any picture up for consideration must be released and playing in Hollywood for at least 1 week prior to December 31st. And they all seem to hold them right up to that deadline. And then do they release them? Personally, I think this is a terrible practice. Olivia de Havilland joins Hollywood's Immortals with her footprints in the cement in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater. However, I fail to see how this little bit of publicity will win Livy another Academy Award, even if her movie, My Cousin Rachel, is so great. Olivia is, perhaps, one of the most unfriendly actresses in Hollywood, both with other fellow stars and with the press. She'll have to have her head set in a window of the Broadway Hollywood, smiling, along with her footprints in the forecourt of the Grauman's Chinese, I think, before people will take to her again. I'll wager right now she won't win the Oscar for her performance, for I'm one person who feels that Oscars are given not only for good performances, but as a sign of popularity with the movie industry folks. And I don't know of a more unpopular gal these days than Livy de Havilland. Just look over the record. Do you remember when Jimmy Dunn won his Oscar for A Tree Grows in Brooklyn? A grand performance, but a grander guy. They'll tell you in Hollywood that stars are tired of being dragged into star parts with Vera Ralston, who in private life is Mrs. Herbert J. Yates. I don't blame them either. Perhaps this is the reason that Herbert J. Yates and John Wayne are feuding. Remember, I only say perhaps this is the reason. Up in Las Vegas, Nevada, present-day movie stars are planning a bit of long-range publicity by placing mementos in a 9-foot aluminum time capsule that will be open in the year 2052 in Las Vegas. No one present today is expected to be present then. The capsule, which already contains a microfilm of movie trade papers and gossip columns, including a script of your reporters, George Fisher, was unveiled yesterday at the opening ceremonies of a new $5 million hotel. Jimmy Durante's hat was also placed at the disposal of future historians, together with a story of his life. A Frankie Lane record, a Bing Crosby pipe, an Arthur Godfrey ukulele, and a copy of Tallulah Bankhead's autobiography were placed beside Durante's topper. You know something? In the next 1,000 years, there are only 2 people in that group, I think, that will ever possibly be remembered in history. Bing Crosby's pipe, Jimmy Durante's topper. In the next 12 months, other celebrities will add their trademarks to the capsule before it is buried 20 feet under the hotel building, December 17th, 1953. Just good for them. A New York-born ex-GI, he's Bonar Colliano, traveled the longest route to Hollywood to get recognition as an actor. Because he went to England and gained fame on the British stage and screen before winning his first American role, for which he had to be imported from England. Now, Colliano was signed for the top role in the Columbia picture 8 Iron Men. He is, incidentally, one of the few GIs who remained overseas to gain post-war acting fame. Bonar was born and bred in a family of showpeople. Heir to the circus name of 3 generations of international fame, he spent the first few years of his life in the atmosphere of the circus. As a youngster, he rode ponies and baby elephants and drove midget racing cars. He made his first professional appearance at the age of 5 at the Palace Theater in New York, playing straight man to his father's acrobatics with jokes routine. At that time, Bonar was given one of the only 3 licenses to be issued to child performers to appear on the New York stage. Bonar was born Bonar Sullivan in New York City in 1924. His father was an acrobat and his mother an acrobatic dancer. Both are retired now and living in London. The young actor was named after the British Prime Minister, Bonar Law. Young Bonar's grandfather, the late Cornelius Sullivan, was born in County Cork, Ireland, where he ran a circus. At the turn of the century, things were not going well for him, so he packed up and sailed for Australia, where he married and raised a family of 6 children. Borrowing some money, Grandpa Sullivan formed another circus in Australia, and giving it a name, he selected the first name of one of his daughters, Coral. Thus it became Coral Circus. Eventually, and probably for the European flavor, the name was changed to Colliano's Circus. Today, Bonar's uncle, the great Con Colliano, is the world-famous high-wire walker and is currently appearing with the Clyde Beatty Show. Bonar's aunt, Winifred, is a well-known aerialist who works with circuses and fairs throughout the United States. Incidentally, Bonar Colliano is one of the fine top performers in Columbia's Stanley Kramer release of 8 Iron Men. And that's the feature story of the day. Now for the Hollywood Whispers. Richard Jackall spent 5 days rehearsing for his big romantic scene with Terry Moore in the Hal Wallace film Come Back, Little Sheba. Dick portrays Turk, a college track star, and Terry is cast as Marie, a co-ed, in this Paramount Picture version of the Theater Guild stage production. The film stars Shirley Booth in the role she originated on Broadway. Doris Day, starring in April in Paris, has a dance number with 8 white French poodles dyed blue, red, yellow, chartreuse, green, aquamarine, cerise, and teal blue. Doris has a French poodle of her own at home, but she says that he's a dog of a different color. There's nothing glamorous about Smudgy. He's just plain black. Brad Crawford carried around a lot of extra weight in his first scene in the Warner Brothers production Stop You're Killing Me. Brad's 225-pound frame was loaded down with an old-style 35-pound bulletproof vest. By the way, Brad sings in Stop You're Killing Me. I don't say he sings good, but he does sing. And that's Hollywood Today. This is George Fisher, your CBS Hollywood reporter and CBS Radio Motion Picture Editor. And I'll be back tomorrow and each day, Monday through Friday, partially transcribed, with more off-guard and on-tape visits with stars at home and the latest Hollywood happenings. Now,
George Fisher reports every day at this time over the CBS Radio Network.